Hey everybody, welcome to today's episode of No Killing Goblins. I'm here with Dragonus, my co-host.
Hey, it's Dragonus.
And my name's Oshi. We are going to talk today about the newest edition of Volume 1. It's been updated, edited, has a couple of new parts, and it's a lot of excitement. Pirate's been doing this for like 6.5 months, 7.5, 2 years, 3 years, I don't fucking know. They've been doing it for a long time. And just to be upfront about this, Dragonus and I both got a chance to beta read it in February when Pirate was done with their editing and fixing and all that stuff. So we got to see it about a month before the official release.
Yep.
Okay. Having said all that, let's talk about something other than TWI. I don't know where to start. It's been a weird week.
Same. In the past couple of weeks, I have picked up League as a habit again, which is just not great for my health.
I tried to quit. I left a World of Warcraft because I just didn't have time anyway, and the season was done, and I'd already made it to 2000 IO on the whole dungeons thing, whatever. Basically, I did my shit. And I was done, I left in February, and I thought, maybe this is also the time to try to quit, like, League and stuff. I went cold turkey. 2 weeks, I literally could not find anything to replace it. Like, I needed that ability to play a game for 20 minutes and then just rage out and leave it and forget it exists. Like, I need something like that.
I had quit for a good year, and I actually went in, did a lot of Counter-Strike, Valorant, I picked up chess again, got chat banned on chess one too many times, and just sort of eventually drifted back in, because, like, League is an experience that's hard to find elsewhere. The only alternative is Dota, and I just don't like Dota.
I don't know. I like to think that I know what's going on with my head a lot of times, and League of Legends is just like, it's crawled into this like back brain, lizard brain part of me that needs to just beat something up, and there is nothing else that fulfills that anymore. Like, I don't play Counter-Strike, I don't play Apex, I can't do shooting games, but I need to beat something up.
Yeah, that's fair. I probably could afford to play more of the single-player games that have bloated my Steam list beyond all logic or reason, but I just don't have a lot of time. And quick League game in between trying to get, like, other stuff going on just fits.
I know! It's just too convenient! It's the convenience that hits you. I've tried single-player games, too, but really, the last 5 or 6 years, all single-player games are basically card game, good decent ones are card games, quote-unquote roguelites. And bitch, once you play one, you don't need to play like six more.
I don't know if I agree with that. I love various roguelikes and roguelites and rogue-adjacent things that call themselves one of the two despite not really qualifying.
I mean, I can't get into it. The last one that I tried to play was actually a really good one. It's the... God damn, I can't remember. It's like... It's like six different card games into one, and it plays like a roguelike. I can't remember the name of it. It's so cool, though. If I remember it, I'll tell you. But it's been a while since I played it, and then during my League of Legends abstinence period, I tried to find games. I spent like $100, give or take, in the last couple of months trying to find a replacement. Nothing works. Nothing. I bought RPG games, I bought a bunch of stuff. Like, nothing works. There's just not... Stardew Valley might have worked, but I don't want to get involved in Stardew again. Ugh.
Stardew Valley.
I've been waiting and hoping and praying that he releases his next... Like, did you see the creator's updates about his chocolate game? Chocolatier?
I have not.
You have to check it out. It is so cute. I can't wait to play that.
I will look it up. My life otherwise has been very boring and very adult.
I would say the same, aside from the one, just transitioning from old job to new job has been interesting because I'm accepting less money, and in return, I no longer have to work 80 hours a week. I have enough to live on. I think I can pay off my credit card debts by the end of this year, which is shocking. And I no longer have to work 80 hours a week. And I'm like, I still can't take a break. Like, I'm in that mindset, in that grind set, and I just don't know how to, like, slow down. And, I don't know. There was a period where there was, like, quiet quitting and all that stuff, and I'm like, maybe I'm doing that.
Maybe. I was about to recommend a hobby, and then I realized any hobby I can recommend is just not. There are some things that you don't do to your enemies, let alone your friends. Like, recommend you pick up something like miniature painting.
Absolutely not. I don't have space for miniatures. I also am terrible painter. Like, I tried, it's just not. It takes a level of dexterity, and I've ruined my hands.
It's not as so hard for doing stuff like D&D minis. Like, they're not as small as like the men your mental image of them might be, and usually, especially with like newer contrast paint stuff, it's very easy to get the colors on, do some fine detail, have a very passable mini, get some practice in. But it's also, even if you're doing it cheaply, too fucking expensive. And kind of addicting, and then you wind up like me, and you have literal pounds of unpainted gray plastic just sitting around your apartment.
I had a recent, not to connect to hobbies thing. I had a recent conversation with someone when about like that made me like weirdly uncomfortable, but not for the reason you think. Okay, I should stop like prefacing everything. We were talking about books. We were just talking about like books to read, and my friend was talking about how he just could not find anything that was interesting to read. He's like in his mid-20s, doesn't know, like he just what didn't pick up reading as a habit until the era of light novels and like he's a total weeb. Learns Japanese as a program, whatever. And I'm like, how am I going to get? How can he say that there are no good books? There's all these good books. And then I turned around and looked backwards on my life and realized he's been reading heavily for 6 years. I've been reading heavily since I was 12 years old. I may know a few things that this person doesn't. And then I picked up a couple of books for him and all that stuff. But it just made me realize that hobby-wise, I've reached a point in my life where I'm ready for something new because I'm not even reading books as much. Not including The Wandering Inn, I just can't find books that I enjoy anymore. Not that I can't find books I can't read, it's just I don't enjoy them as much.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had that problem. There's always another book that I feel like I'm gonna like want how do I put this? There's always another book that I can pick up, and maybe it's just the ADHD, but I can get engrossed in anything.
It's not about the actual aspect of reading a book. It's that this is a book I will recommend for the next 20 years kind of thing. It takes a long, long time to get those books out. Like, it takes writers a long, long time to write something that's truly like a distillation and something that somebody will read forever. And I've finally reached an age where I no longer have a backlog of 100 years or 200 years worth of stuff to sift through. Instead, I get 5 or 10 years because I've already sifted through the other 100 years. You know what I mean? I'm at that point, and now you're like, I'm gonna spend the rest of my life waiting for someone to come up with a classic for me to read?
I really don't get it. No, I'm sorry. I
No.
don't get what you
Oh.
mean.
Okay. I have no idea how to describe it. Maybe somebody else understands it. It's just
Well,
this.
okay, I actually kind of do get what you mean, but not for books. I get what you mean for anime, though.
Okay, and it's the same thing for anime. Like, it
But
takes five, but for anime, I don't mind as much.
Well, no, here's the thing, though. But with anime, especially with the number of shows coming out every season, it's really weird because I can point towards like the last 2 years, and every season, sometimes twice a season, there is an all-time genuine classic, like best of the best ever made. And it's just the mass amount of it in the output. But I do kind of get what you mean, just in this feeling of like, I've watched everything, I am caught up really and truly, and the only thing left to do now is wait for new stuff to come out.
Exactly. I'm at the point where there's just nothing to do but waiting for new stuff. And
You
I'm gonna be
should pick
wait.
up anime more then, because anime puts out so much new stuff.
And I'm gonna tell you this right now. I tried that for a short period of time, and what I realized was anime put out shit. And there's a reason why there's one or two every season, and not 30.
Yeah. But have you watched Vivi Fluorite Eyes
You
song?
mean Vivi?
Vivi Fluorite Eyes song, yeah.
That it's great. It was great.
Yeah,
The
all-time classic.
animation,
Utterly beautiful.
it's beautiful, but I don't think I want to talk about Vivi right now. I honestly, I'm in the middle of watching it. Like, I think I was in three episodes, so maybe I shouldn't talk about it.
Oh, yeah, it's a good thing you warned me, because I was about to start talking about, like, the ending, which there's a sushi place down the road from me, and I more often than I would have imagined before I started eating there regularly, hear them slipping weeb music on. Like the other day I had to pull out my phone and Shazam something because they were playing like one of the character songs for Haruhi character. They put on the song at the very end of Vivi Fluorite Eyes, and I had to excuse myself to the bathroom to go cry for 5 minutes. Finish it. But like just that aside, I can name a bunch of stuff that's come out very recently that's worth checking out. But yeah, it's easier for something that is easier to put out in that collaborative nature. Books take time. Books take effort. Books are also kind of subjective.
I don't know how to like. I only have sad news other than that. I'm trying to avoid talking about current events, and honestly, it's just like there's a lot of stuff that weighs in my mind, and I don't really have like anything to say about it. I'm having a nice moment in my life where I have a little bit of money, a little bit of free time. And I look up and I realize that maybe I was working so hard because part of it was avoiding looking at the world. Because the world's not that nice. Or at least in the US, it's not that nice. I don't know.
I don't know. I'm kind of I'm just a cynical person. I figure it sucks now. It's always sucked. It'll suck in the future. Do what we can. I am, moving forward in my life. On the subject of my life just being boring adult shit, I am looking at housing and buying a house and just all that, and then I realized I really am old. Not even just because I'm at a point where I can afford it, but I'm at a point where I can trust myself not to blow my entire paycheck on video games.
You realize that a lot of the video games out there, they're just like, I don't want them enough to pay money for them. And I feel bad saying that, because they're lovingly created, we all know that, but they're just like, I don't really want to buy another Civ or a DLC for City Skylines or Tropico or pay for the next Destiny game because I don't want to play Destiny.
Oh man, there is at least once a month, at least minimum, a game that comes out that I look at and say, "Ooh, I want that. I should buy it." And I would gladly pay money for it. I'm just trying to cut down on my spending. But like, there's definitely stuff that's worth it.
I don't know. I haven't really felt. Maybe in general, I haven't really felt like television still delivers for now. There's still really great episodes of things, and TWI still delivers, and the writers that I love still deliver. But in general, Like, I haven't really found that serendipitous moment of this is new, this is great. Instead, I'm going to the next Final Fantasy moment. You know what I mean?
I guess. I could start naming off and trying to recommend you things, but it's probably stuff you have already heard of anyways, and maybe it's just, you're at a point in your life where video games just aren't that big of a deal or important to you anymore.
I just told you how addicted I am to like League of Legends, and I'm
Well,
already
sure,
planning to go
but
back to Rocket.
League of Legends, I'm trying to the right way to put this. League of Legends isn't League of Legends almost genuinely feels like an addiction. It is designed and crafted and put together to be something that is difficult to walk away from forever because you can always just hop on and play a quick game and get the good brain juices, and it's 20, 30 minutes of your life, and then you're done. And.
What I really want is something like, sorry, I interrupt you. Go on.
Oh, and it's just always there, but I don't even know if I would qualify it as like a video game in the sense of we're talking about, buying a single player or, maybe some variety of multiplayer type game that you're spending money on, that you're committing, 5 to 10 hours of your life to play through, or an MMO where you're committing to keeping caught up and grinding. It feels like it's captured a lot of that same energy a lot of mobile games have to get you to hop on and play them, and every now and then you spend a bit of money, but while also being, a full on your PC game.
First off, I found the roguelite. I couldn't remember the name's Inscription.
Oh, yeah, that one's really fun.
Inscription's really fun. That was fun. And for me, I think what I'm looking for is this particular feeling, and it's this ability to I don't know how
You want
to say.
something new. You want something you haven't seen before. You want something that sort of captures you and brings you back to that magic of when you first booted on a video game and pressed the buttons and.
No, not exactly. I've had that for a long. Every gamer has that. Every gamer wants to feel that. No. What I'm talking about is like that feeling of comfort that you get from playing something that has a story that like if you were a Chrono Trigger fan or a Final Fantasy IV or V fan or VI or any of the like Breath of Fire games where you have these kind of RPGs where the story will be just new enough that you can like invest into it, you can enjoy it, you can play it for long periods. Honestly, what I want is to be able to play Pokemon. I can't believe I'm saying like something like Pokemon or, Final Fantasy Tactics all over again, where it's just about grinding through stuff while playing through a pleasant and like heartwarming story.
I have a recommendation for you, although you just said pleasant and heartwarming about Final Fantasy Tactics, so.
Okay. Ta I'm sorry. I meant Final Fantasy Tactics Advanced. My
Okay,
bad.
fair. But there is actually a really fun game I've been playing. It's definitely what I wouldn't call pleasant and heartwarming, though. I was going to recommend it because you said you like Final Fantasy Tactics. But it's called The Iron Oath. It's still in its, early access beta phase, but it's a very fun, very different sort of turn-based tactical RPG. The plot is there as an excuse for you to do your grinding stuff, but there's enough there that you like it's not just a pure excuse. It's pretty fun, but I don't know if it has quite what you're looking for in that Final Fantasy Advanced vein.
It's too dark.
Yeah.
I know it. I've Googled it before. I've seen people
Yeah,
play it. It's just a little too dark
just
for
a
me.
little too dark, yeah.
It's actually, I think from a gameplay point of view, it probably is great because it looks like it uses a lot of the aesthetic appeal of the old like 90s, late or early 2000s kind of
Yeah, it's also made a very deliberate decision to have the character classes feel different and non-standard. It's a lot of like setting stuff up and using the map and creating obstacles, and it's very fun.
It
If you are,
sounds it. It sounded like a lot of fun. It just isn't something I'm in the mood for right now,
if
if
you
that makes
were
sense.
more of like a giant robot anime type fan, I'd say you should check out Super Robot Wars, but I don't know if you ever fell down that particular rabbit hole.
Pass. No, I don't want to play. You know, there. I don't know. It's a nostalgia trip. I completely forgot I was going to mention something that was super important. Oh God, you made me forget by mentioning the oath thing. We're like looking for a way to make me feel better. The reason I'm talking so much about games and spending time is because today is technically my first day off after 12 days of working, and Adragonus is being very kind to do this late in the evening and just like put up with my and like I don't even know like ennui. Is that what it's called?
Ennui, I think, is exactly where you are right now.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I'm at right now.
Meanwhile, I kind of have had that feeling the past few years about different things, on Wii in general, not the specific video game problem. Right now, though, I don't know, I'm just feeling excited. I moan a bit about the weird adulting that comes from it, but like, yeah, I probably am gonna have a house before the next few months are out. It's a little wild. I'm really happy for myself. And it's just taking up all of the space in my brain now that I've committed to the decision, you know? It's all I can think about.
Okay, oh my God. I kind of want to talk about this, but it's a current events thing. So it's technically a tech thing. So I've started to follow a little bit more tech news, and I read a lot of news today. That's why I was being depressed about it. But there's a app that they put out for asylum seekers, and it uses facial recognition technology. And you could already tell where this is leading, right?
Somewhere
Because
terrible.
Facial recognition technology is it's bad for anybody who's not white because the creators of facial recognition technology only inputted white faces because those are the only people that exist in the world. And otherwise, you don't exist. And if your facial recognition technology can't recognize you, it's your fault, not theirs. That's the it may be unhelpful, but you know what? You're the like I speak to a lot of tech bros, and tech bros are like, tech's gonna save the world, we're just not gonna involve you in it. Like, how does this always seem to happen? There's this inherent belief that technology is unbiased when like it's not, because because human beings are involved and human beings have bias, and you create these pieces of technology that are going to be used by governments and people judiciously. And they're not gonna give a crap if it doesn't recognize your face because they don't give a crap about you. They just want something that makes life easier for them. And it's an easy sell, it's easy money, but it also causes enormous amounts of suffering on a basic level. This is just a migrant technology. They use facial recognition. Like, I was watching this TV show called The Miss Pat Show on BET. Because I like Miss Pat, she's a great comedian, and I enjoy her particular piece of humor. And on the episode, there was like the cold open for it was that she was trying to use her phone, but the facial recognition app wouldn't recognize her, so she had to use somebody else's phone. And I was like, oh, that's a weird joke to make. And in this very second, I realized, oh my God, that's what they meant.
Yeah.
Ugh.
The earliest example I remember hearing about for this is it went kind of viral. I think it was like a video of somebody from one of the hotels at Dragon Con, but I can't remember exactly where they were. But it was just this black guy pointing out this very racist sink that would not give him water. Every other
Oh yeah,
sink
the
in the
sink.
would, but that one wouldn't because it wasn't tuned properly and the IR wouldn't bounce back from the darker skin.
The entire technology is based around being for people who of lighter skin tones. It just is.
Well, though, because every other one worked, it's just you had to calibrate it properly, and that one
No,
wasn't.
no, no. That's the thing, though. The fact that you have to calibrate means that the baseline is not around deeper skin tones or on variations of skin tones. It's a baseline that it works from, which means that the baseline had to be chosen and then calibrated properly.
Well, it's because the technology needs to bounce like IR stuff off. Like it, yes. That's how that works. It has to be calibrated.
Yeah, it has to be calibrated, which means that the inherent technology was first researched on a baseline that they chose. And that baseline then became how they developed the calibration technology. That baseline had to come from somewhere. This is what I mean by the inherent biases within the development of the technology. When in the development stream, you're going to use something as the basic technology, like the basic research technology. I was talking about Kindle. You know how Kindle has thousands of options for how the skin, the tone of the paper that you're looking at will be. Have you ever done that?
Yeah, I usually
So
just
an
stick to dark
artist,
mode, but I know there
yeah.
are other options.
So for that to be possible, somebody had to go through and do every single variation individually. And it's thousands of man hours. And when the basic tech guy is like, I don't want to do thousands of man hours. I'm just going to use my skin tone, and that's the way it's going to be. And then I'll just make it so that they can calibrate. And I'm sure they'll do fine. They'll calibrate it perfectly. And I'll just tell them the technology is unbiased. It drives me insane that it exists that way. But and I've been thinking about this. I shouldn't be ranting about it. Let's not talk about this. Let's transition to something happier. Let's talk about Volume One. That was a horrible transition. I'm
That was
sorry.
a
I couldn't think of
terrible
the.
transition, but on the subject of
It was.
Volume 1. So, overall, how'd you like it?
Okay, so first off, I want to get start. We mentioned at the start that I mentioned at the start that we bait Dragnus and I beta read it, and I want to be clear about some of the language here. It is not a rewrite. Because rewrite implies the pirate went through every single chapter and rewrote it entirely. No, pirate did not do that. What pirate did is what normal writers do, which is they went to an editor and edited their fucking manuscript. And on top of that, they rewrote like four chapters and added a bunch of stuff.
Yeah, like
That's.
almost every chapter feels like stuff has been added to it somewhere, but like it's not like they completely changed the underlying structure of the story or anything. They just found a way to make Ryoka even more annoying.
Okay, no, but I think what was important to Pirate was just to improve the quality of the prose, the descriptions, make the story feel more like a normal novel rather than a stumbling first time right like not first time but like early writer Pirate ABBA. And that was what they were trying to achieve, and I think they did that.
Oh, absolutely. Like the actual underlying prose and the writing 100% better every step of the way.
And then because of that, because it was more like stuff added and things fixed around, I prefer to think of it as a new edition rather than a rewrite, because that's what it really is. It's just a new edition of the book.
Yeah, that seems fair.
Yeah. Oh, excuse me. I hiccup. Oh. Oh my God. I lost my train of thought. I hiccup.
Well,
Help me here,
yeah, no,
Dragonus.
sorry, I wasn't expecting you to lose your train of thought, and then that derailed my train of thought, and now, I don't know,
We're.
something something insensitive Ohio joke. But there are some things about it, though, like, so the early chapters have a couple things.
I remember. This is important before we preface this. I'm hiccuping. Oh no. So there's a couple of pieces of information that we have from what Pirate and their assistant has said. Oh my God. One, the audiobook is being redone. Two, there will be an update to the Kindle version. Oh my God. Three, There will be a physical book.
I'm super hyped for the physical book, especially after I missed out on getting the Beware Chicken one.
Wait, you didn't get one?
No, I had a tire problem, so I couldn't afford it.
You want me to send you my copy after I'm done reading?
No.
Okay.
You deserve your copy, and I'll have my copy eventually on eBay, probably.
So those were the few things that we've managed to find out. I thought maybe we should start off with the answers. And yeah, I have the hiccups now, so
Yeah.
this is gonna be a fun 30 minutes
Well,
now.
so one thing I immediately noticed going into the first few chapters, it's a really big change early on with the goblins, because we actually get some very early Rags perspectives. And that right there, that very early feeling that we talked about when we talked about these chapters the first time through, where we were talking about how, like, at least I was very frustrated with Erin, with how she was handling the goblin thing, just not really wanting to treat them like the real, very dangerous threat that they are when Relk is trying to get rid of them for her. But now that we get just a little bit of Rags' perspective and understanding for what's going on their end, it smo it flo it flows much more smoothly and
That's part
feels
of
less
it.
jarring.
That's part of it, but you also have to take give Pyat credit for like developing a sort of back and forth between the goblins and Erin. She observes them more. There's more explicit observation between the two. So the goblins are watching her, they attack her, they do things. And Erin is also watching them. There's an entire sequence where Erin observes as Rags figures out how to avoid the Amentus fruit that's poisonous.
Yeah. Like, it definitely feels more like, what was the word I was just saying? It makes sense now that Erin is, viewing these goblins as people and not monsters that have tried to eat her several times.
A lot of what it was that Pirate developed in the first set of chapters is that essential feeling, like giving depth and reasoning to a lot of her choices, because without that depth and without that context, it's a lot harder to empathize with Erin, and you tend to see her as klutzy or stupid or weird about her choices. But now it makes a lot more sense. The scene that I particularly loved, where Ghazi is observing as Erin comes out. Oh my God, I didn't even mention Ghazi is way more terrifying. I think in general, all of Volume 1, the characterizations for new characters and old is like way, way better.
Yeah. Well, it's because it's really clear. God, we are just a mess today. It
Yeah.
is very clear that, especially for like Ghazi, that there's a better idea for who the character is supposed to be in their arc. So Ghazi feels more like Ghazi, the omniscient terror to behold, and less like this person we're told is really scary and has a few tense moments with people, but they don't really radiate that menacing aura the way that Ghazi does now. And yeah, I think you're about to talk about the scene where there's the scuffle and Erin beats up the adventurers and Ghazi observes her and sort of monologues a bit about it and about
And just
Erin and how she's treating them differently, because I love that
well,
scene.
well that, but also just remember, I love the scene where Erin like kills the spider, the shield spiders, and decides not to kill. Like in general, there's just a more explicit understanding of the of Erin in general. Like she talks about chess more. There's more of an exploration of why she feels so defeated after she leaves Lescore. Lescore's introduction, by the way, is so good. It's so much
Yeah.
better.
On the subject of her and talking about chess more, she also talks a bit more about her family, and I think it leads really well into her breakdown during the Christmas chapters in Volume 2 now, way better. It's much more that you can feel that there's something she's pushing down and trying to avoid on the subject. And
Yeah, and go ahead.
like it I think she feels like she's got a lot more of the depth and stuff going on behind her facade of goofiness. Also,
Yeah.
on top of everything, especially her interactions with the goblins, just continue to highlight just how much Torin was Eren's greatest failure. I don't know. I can't point specifically at like a whole anything that's changed with the Torin interactions, but I feel like he's slightly more expressive now, sometimes with his eyes, just in a way that makes me go, Eren, how did you not? What's going on here? You can manage to figure out goblins are people while they're trying to murder you, but you can't figure out your skeleton has opinions and feelings. Oh, the feelings.
On top of that, there is just there's a small passage where Tarriarch is given a POV, and I think it's probably going to be the one of the more controversial choices because the original edition had Tarriarch be like one of the hidden text things, and people love that because they're obsessed with. I don't really think of it as a big deal. It's just going to be a different experience for new readers.
The only thing I have to say about adding in her, or adding in his perspective, the timing of it kind of pulls out of this otherwise sort of intense, grim, in-the-moment survival struggle for Eren. It's the same, actually, a similar feeling I have about the goblin stuff. They're all good additions, but I do feel like there's something lost by getting perspective outside of Eren's. It's less claustrophobic, might be the word I'm looking for. Closed
I
in.
think that was exactly what Parrot was trying to get at, to not make it claustrophobic, because this is not a survival story. A lot I really want to say this to everybody who says the words. It doesn't feel as much like a survival struggle anymore. This is not a survival book.
I get that. I don't think that it's a survival book or that it's about surviving and that the survival struggle going away is a bad thing. I just think it's a powerful hook and it was really. Really
It
good
was
early
not.
writing. I liked it.
I skipped all of it if I could have. Because I did not enjoy hearing about. It wasn't that I didn't enjoy. It just made it slow. And the constant struggle and the minutiae, it makes sense if this was a survival story. This is not a survival story. Once I completed Volume 1, I felt like the worst part of Volume 1 was the introduction because it was a lie. It felt like a lie to me in comparison to the rest of the book.
I strongly disagree. I don't think it felt like a lie at all. And even through the rest of the book and going into the next book, the core idea of Eren trying to make her way and struggle and, keep her head above water and deal with all the bullshit going on around her doesn't change. It's just less explicitly about the day-to-day getting food. But I like that it started from there and went up. And it still does in this, right? That's not gone. It's just like I don't know. I think that there was a. Oh, give me a second to rephrase my fucking brain. I just feel like there was something real to it that was good. And I guess it gave people the wrong impression, and what we have now is also really good. I wouldn't give these rags parts up in order to get back that feeling, but I don't think it was inherently bad, just different.
I never liked it, and I preferred like the middle of the story, the Torn aspects, a lot of the other stuff that kept me reading. It was not the survival stuff, so that's where I'm at, and I don't miss it at all. Overall, I think the note to take from all of this for me was the changes in Ryoka's story line. Oh my God. Please tell me you can edit my hiccups out.
You hiccup anymore, I'm gonna make one of the editors do it.
I can't stop. I drank a full glass of water. It's not helping.
It's gonna be way too much to try and edit these things out mid-sentence. I think the rest of the world is just gonna know you had hiccups today.
Oh my God, this is so embarrassing. Oh my God. Okay, so the Ryoka chapters were the biggest changes because it allowed more breathing room and more description for Magnolia and Ressa, and it introduced Ryoka in a more in a soft not a softer way, but in a more clear in a more clarified way, so that the character has a chance to get her hooks into you before you start being like, why are you being such a idiot? Now there's explanations of why she's acting the way she is. It's not so much that she doesn't like start up fights and act nasty and paranoid and arrogant. It's you know why. You can see her fear and her uncertainty and her sense of what's the word I'm looking for?
Deep
It's
self-loathing, deep
no.
entitlement, deep.
Entitlement. The sense of entitlement that allows her to think that she knows better than other people. And a lot of her paranoia is grounded in reasonable things, but her way of going around dealing with that paranoia is horrible. It just it
Yeah,
was horrible.
they make Magnolia so much more menacing is the best way I can think of to put it. She's charming, she's friendly. You really actually get a good feel for why she would be sending up all of the flags and the flares and the fire alarms in Ryoka's brain. And I definitely like it more because I always thought that Magnolia came across as a little weird in this book, and it's definitely much better and stronger. I will say, though, the extra stuff that's been added in and changed with some of the runners, and like their dynamic, the dynamic of the guild, I still think that it's. What's what I'm looking for here? I still cannot shake this deep feeling I've always had that I'm fairly certain at this point is accidental about the way that her interaction with Persua and Falls and the structure of the guild feels like somebody deliberately writing some like active subversion of a Randian like Fountainhead-esque novel. But Persua, holy shit. Just Persua. Holy shit.
I think people are going to be like, I'm not going to spend any time trying to talk to people who have these weirdly aggressive opinions about how Persua was not so bad before and now she's so terrible and all that stuff. This is Persua. This is the person that we were always shown. There is no difference between now and before. The only difference is you decide to pay attention to the bad signs, and Pirate didn't hide them. Like, that's it.
Yeah, I will say, so I am not on the train that says Persua was never this bad. In the original text, by the text, she actively shattered and destroyed Ryoka's leg for the most
She tr
petty of bullshit reasons and attempted to cripple her for life. But
Right, and she didn't do it alone. That's a big thing. And she didn't do it alone. That's why the other runners get as much screen time as they do now.
Yeah. But what I was going to say, though, is we get more observant. Fuck, I just completely lost my train of thought now. Shit. Oh, yeah. But as she was presented in the original story, she was much more of just a generic mean girl with a particularly nasty action. This really captures what we start to see from her in Volume 2. Was it Volume 2 where she threatened to have Ryoka?
Yes.
Yeah. Like, this is where we start to see just how, like, utterly deep down to her soul, this woman's a sociopath, this woman is.
I think the general thing was that she is like borderline. There are people. There are people we know that exist in that borderline where they just cannot see the world as anything that's except as competition. Every single other person other than themselves is competition. Their existence means that you have less because they exist. And that is an entire point of view that plenty of people we know in the world like share,
Yeah.
or some variation of it. And pursue is just a reflection of that. I
Yeah.
don't see it as anything shocking.
Well, I
I
don't see it as
should, but.
shocking either. It's just, whereas previously she felt like somebody who probably had like actual, clinical narcissism, now she really does feel like somebody who has definitely shifted over to active clinical sociopath. Like, no one alive seems to have any value to her other than what she's getting from them, and she will cripple, murder, and kill people that annoy her. She's something fucking else. And actually, if you want to talk more about her, let's start from the backwards and move forwards and talk about the new Ryoka rewritten 55.
I think I'll let you handle the Ryoka chapter because the hiccups are gonna destroy me. We have basically the same opinions on it. If I disagree, I'll tell you.
Sure. Well, the new Ryoka chapter, when rewritten, now is no longer almost entirely her internal monologue. I don't know how I feel about that.
I don't know either,
I like this
and.
chapter a lot. This chapter is really good. I think it's really cool to get this early meeting of Isara. The blood fields feel better defined, and there's some really cool stuff in them that we get to see. Seeing the depth Persua will go to this early on. If anything, the one thing I'll say is it definitely feels like it's playing the hand about what a psychopath she is. Like, her trying to murder Ivalith in cold blood and then threatening Ryoka is not going to have that same deep shock as it had before. But I just something about that old chapter, and actually, slight side tangent here. There is a different book series that I was recommended to recently, I've been reading, that was recommended to me in part because it's rough. It's like urban fantasy. It's pretty like decently well written, and then every now and then it just goes off in like this weird, rough direction that's very unpolished and probably wouldn't survive past like a more intense editing process, but just really pulls you in part because it's kind of weird. Or like a garage band, Green Day type band that puts out their next album. They've cleaned up their sound and something feels like it's missing. That's this chapter for me.
Yeah, okay. I did understand that Pirate recrafted the whole chapter, try to preserve the essence of it all, but to allow us enough depth behind Ryoka's reasoning and to show more of the world and the influences that helped her make the choices that she did. It isn't just Ryoka alone in the world. The thesis of Ryoka's storyline has always been, if you ask for help, maybe it wouldn't be a bad thing, right?
Yeah. No person is an island. No person is so great they can stand alone. You have to acknowledge the community. And God, it just hurts sometimes not to just have people you can talk to and let in. Shit's lonely, unless you're Persua. Who does actually now really stand as a really, really good counterpoint to Ryoka?
I don't really have any other significant points to talk about for Volume 1 because I just enjoyed the Ryoka rewrite. I didn't particularly feel it was handled badly. I talked about all the things. I guess the only thing left to talk is about the way Antinium are represented, and I think Pirate wrote an entirely new introduction to the Antinium, and they changed how which who the first Antinium that sort of not Kill the Kid is introduced, and that's Bird.
Yeah.
Bird gets a chapter.
Yeah, I know. And what's really cool is just how kind of low key it is that it's Bird. And it's really cool. I also really appreciate that very little actually changed about the big Immortal Moment scene.
It's impossible to like miss the fact that Pyrek developed so many pieces that will never quite pay off for sorry, not never quite won't pay off for a long periods of time. Like the introduction of Yesara and putting Bird in, and yet Bird is not like an actualized person until very late. And it's just, and there'll be critiques that this feels like a lot of fan service, but it's not. It's the kind of work that Pirate could have put in if they had had a chance to do it and to develop it, because it took them until I think late volume two to quit their job and to actually write out the plans for the overall series, right?
Yeah, and things always change in the writing. Like, I just suddenly thought of the woman who writes Goblins, Ellipses, who apparently has not deviated from her very, like, strict written-out outline for almost the entire history of the comic, and that is incredibly unusual. So it makes sense when going back and looking at something this rough and that was written before a lot of that stuff was planned out to use the opportunity to make the plot lines flow smoothly into each other and set up some foreshadowing. Like the one big change chapter was the interlude chapter with the summoning, where we now have much more specific people we can point out from that. As opposed to the old one, which I think had at least one character we still never saw again.
Okay, so I think we can wrap out this conversation a little bit about volume one.
No, Oshi.
No?
We are going to
What?
talk about Floss, and you cannot stop me.
Oh, damn it.
So, what was your opinion
Okay,
on the
fine.
Floss chapter?
I didn't have one, I didn't read it.
I appreciated that on the subject of characters who have gained menacing auras, Floss now feels like somebody who is dangerous and there are real consequences for his awakening. It also, though, does a really good job at sort of setting up this idea that wasn't present in the first one, that there's more to it for why he quit than just that he got bored. The first one, I think I once made a comment that his explanation for why he quit felt like me getting to the end of a Civ game and going, well, I've won. I could spend the next hour of my life actually finishing winning when the game tells me I've won, or I can just turn this save off and go start a new one or play something else, right? I've already won. It's too easy to win from here. I'll go play a new one. In this, though, you can kind of feel that there's some absolute fucking bullshit to that. There's a couple lines about grief that, like, make it really clear what's actually going on there. Also, Orthanon has a little bit more personality. The twins still don't, but there's so much that gets put into identifying and talking about them in the King chapters that it would have been redundant to do better introductions for them here. And it definitely sets the tone for when you meet Gazi and see her from then on, because she gets to borrow a lot of Floss's menacingness, and oh boy, she's already so naturally menacing now that, like, it's menacing squared. What do you think about
Look,
that,
I'm about to die from hiccuping. Can we please wrap? I
Oshi?
swear to God, you're trying to punish me.
I'm just saying that maybe if you were willing to engage more on Floss as a subject, then.
I literally spent a day reading all of the volume four things for our next episode on the K chapters. You're gonna make me do this. It's a fucking chapter. Leave me alone. Leave me alone.
It is a good solid chapter, though. I have said more than enough of what needs to be said about it. I just wanted to harass Oshi a little.
Well, let's get the fuck out of here. Huh? Bye, everybody.
Bye, everybody.
You've been listening to No Killing Goblins.
Edited by Liquid Ender.
The music on No Killing Goblins was composed by System Glitch. They can be found at youtube.com/systemglitch. You can get in touch with us via our Twitter at NoKillingGoblin or email us at NoKillingGoblins with an S at gmail.com.